And welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley.
And I'm Seth Arns.
And today we have the pleasure of speaking with author Leanne Henyon, who has written a book called Night Magic, Adventures Among Glowworms, Moon Gardens, and Other Marvels of the Dark. Welcome, Leanne, to This Green Earth.
Thanks so much for having me.
The first thing that I want to talk about is how you specifically went about researching for this book, because you blend a memoir with hard environmental science, and you've structured it so cleverly too, because it brings readers on this kind of episodic navigation through the seasons. So can you share with us how you've collected the content and why you've chosen this way of sharing it with readers?
Sure. So Night Magic was inspired by a magazine story that I wrote about synchronous fireplaces. And after that story ran, a lot of people reached out to me to say, you know, love the firefly story. And it inspired me to turn my porch lights off more often. And that really blew my mind. I was really excited to consider that a story I'd written had inspired someone to take a direct action, change a habit, and turning off their lights, because, you know, a lot of what I learned about fireflies was related to light pollution and how unfortunately it affects and disrupts different parts of their life cycles. So when people reached out to me, though, I don't think they were, you know, really so much worried about wildlife or the fact that light pollution harms human health and affects all of these different species. I think they just got really curious about what they might be missing out on, because I think that most of the cultural stories we have present darkness as hiding things from us, as shrouding knowledge. You know, light is knowledge, darkness is ignorance and death. I mean, we have really negative connotations. But so when people started reaching out to me about that, I think they got curious because they started wondering, like, what might be out there? And so the concept of darkness as having things to teach us, I think it's really kind of countercultural, but it absolutely does. And so I learned a lot from fireflies, and I thought, what else could I learn if I spent time with salamanders and owls and glowworms and moths and bats and all of these other creatures that depend on natural darkness in this age of increasing artificial light? And so, yeah, I did structure things by season. Really, this is really my personal journey to appreciate natural darkness. I love the way that you put it, you know, episodic kind of tag-alongs, like come with me as I explore and learn about darkness, as well as, you know, my own human anatomy, like didn't even know about my circadian rhythm and really understand how my eyes worked in the dark. But I arranged it by season, and I also arranged it, you know, by species and by animals. And so, you know, salamanders migrating, owls nesting, glowworms squirming. And I felt like that was really important because, again, I think we have been taught to equate darkness with death, with a void. And so to think of darkness as a place of transformation and flight and bioluminescence, it really kind of flips that around. And it's a place of activity and this cornucopia of life and really important habitat, even though we don't think of it as habitat very often.
So I'm going to start with the title of this book. There's two terms in there that are somewhere, both glowworms and moon gardens, that are somewhere between a memory and a dream somehow. Glowworms, it conjures up these images of, I don't know, cartoons from my youth. Are they a mythical thing? Are they something real? So tell me, just basically, what are glowworms and moon gardens, and how do these fit into your story?
I love that interpretation of the title, kind of like this liminal space. Yeah, and actually, I just had somebody come up to me at a book event, and they said, "Did you have one of those glowworms?" And I knew exactly what they were talking about. It's like a stuffed animal glowworm that you squeezed it and it lit up.
Yeah, from childhood.
I did have one of those glowworms. Yeah, so I think that, you know, fireflies bring nostalgia, glowworms, just the idea of it is just so exciting and somewhat nostalgic if you had one of those glowworms. There are actually a lot of different things that people refer to as glowworms. So firefly larvae, some people refer to as glowworms because, you know, when you see a firefly rise, you're actually witnessing this last life cycle stage of a creature that has been living around you with you for up to 2 years under and on the ground. And the firefly larvae actually glow. So they're like these little seeds of light, which I just love when I realize this. Like you're surrounded by seeds of light if you are in a place where fireflies fly in summer. So I just love that. There are also they're called railroad worms, names because of the way that patterns on them look like lit windows of a passenger train. But the glowworms that I talk about in Night Magic are actually a form of fungus gnat larvae, and they glow neon blue. And one of my favorite stories from the book kind of illustrates how over and over again I kind of went seeking wonders only to discover that I was already surrounded by them. So I've always wanted to see the glowworms of New Zealand, also neon blue glowworms. I was like willing to travel around the world to see them, only to discover when researching Night Magic that Southern Appalachia, my home region, is one of the only other places on Earth where neon blue glowworms are known to exist. And I not only found them in a neighboring county, I found them in my own neighborhood. So it's one of my favorite kind of anecdotes from the book, is how that journey just kept reminding me of how I was surrounded by wonders, unbeknownst in a sense. And hopefully the book is really just a model for people to recognize that, wherever you live, whatever ecosystem you inhabit, you might only know half of it, as I realized I only knew the daylit half of my best known environments. And moon gardens, I think they're getting a little bit of attention lately. I've noticed moon gardens kind of creeping up in the media, but moon gardens were really popular historically pre-electricity, and they're gardens that focus on species of plants that often reflect moonlight. So you'll have a lot of white blooms, night blooming flowers, also some plants that just have some sensory offerings like lamb's ear, which is reflective of moonlight and also really soft to the touch. So it's a really multi-sensory garden that is planted specifically to be enjoyed in evening. And they're wonderful for moths, which are unsung heroes of the natural world and quite beautiful.
Yeah, you touched on the fact that you found this in your own backyard. So, in your previous book, Phenomenal, you traveled the world to seek wonder, and now you're finding this right in your own backyard. I believe in North Carolina, that's correct.
Yes, so I'm in the mountains of North Carolina. And yes, in my first book, I was chasing natural phenomena around the globe to reawaken my sense of wonder. And this, Night Magic was really challenging to write in a sense. It seems like the running around the world would be challenging, which of course, in parts it was. But my goal with the book was to really have people experience the same level of awe that they did, in reading about the Great Migration in the Serengeti or standing on the Northern Lights when they were with me in a ditch in Western North Carolina. And so hopefully that was my goal. It's a lofty goal, but I feel like the first book really trained me to write this book about finding wonder much closer to home. I think that maybe I needed to have that larger journey to be able to adequately share the wonders of the micro, macro to micro.
And how do you go about actually researching all these creatures? Because obviously, as humans, we don't naturally walk around without light. And we use it as an aid to understand the world around us. How do you research these different species of plants and animals with the absence of light?
Yeah, what I realized pretty early on in the process of kind of my self-designed pilgrimage or quest, which I feel really fortunate to have created a career of self-designed pilgrimages and quests, which is really what Night Magic was, I set out to find guides. And I pretty quickly recognized that I not only needed guides to help me have responsible encounters with these species, I also just needed people around me who had spent time reacclimating and kind of reacquainting themselves with darkness. You know, because in the electrified world, a lot of us do not spend time walking around without flashlights or even sitting in the dark without glancing at our phone screen. So that was really helpful, is to find guides to be helpful, you know, and how do you walk through the dark? You want to do pronounced heel toe when you're walking around so that you don't trip over roots and things like that. And, you know, again, back to the responsibly, how to responsibly have encounters, you know, is a challenge. How do you responsibly have a close encounter with a bat? So I attended an event called Bat Blitz with a lot of bat biologists and bat enthusiasts who were doing research work. And so I was able to really have a meaningful experience with bats, to experience moths. I attended an event in Ohio, which was absolutely as fun as it sounds, and it's called Mothapalooza. So it's a moth-loving festival where I learned so much in such a short amount of time from people who are enthusiastic about moths. And so just as birders are enthusiastic about birds, people who set out night after night to find diverse and gorgeous species of moths call themselves mothers. So I quickly became a mother. And in that process, I, you know, was introduced to moths. I was introduced to, you know, my own relationship to darkness and light, because you do have to use light to attract moths to see what kind of diversity there is out there. But it's incredibly powerful when you go to a mothing station, which is what a lot of times mothers refer to these setups that they create. So you have a white sheet and various light sources so that moths will be attracted and come and land on these sheets so that you can see this incredible diversity. And again, I think it's really powerful to have an experience where the dark, which you've kind of been told is this dead-end place, to have all of this diverse and beautiful life coming out of it is really impactful. So Mothapalooza and Bat Blitz, attending things like that were really helpful in helping me, you know, have close encounters and also really better understand the way that I relate to darkness. You know, ultimately, I did set up a mothing station in my own yard where I was introduced to these species that I have been surrounded by my entire life and never met before. And it's again a little bit odd to be using artificial light after you're learning how artificial light is so harmful, but you don't do it in the same place all the time, and you don't do it very often. And I do think it's an important way to begin to appreciate what's out there, even when you're not seeing it.
So I want to take a little bit of a step back and ask about bioluminescence in general. When we think about bioluminescence, I think the thing that comes to people's mind first is bioluminescence in the ocean. But we have talked about some examples of bioluminescence on land, fireflies, glowworms. In reading some information about your book, you brought up forests with bioluminescent mushrooms. I wanted to ask specifically about that. And also going back to that glowworm, the glowworms, you mentioned that some of those were bioluminescent mushrooms. Are those the same things, or are there other examples of bioluminescent mushrooms? And speak just generally about bioluminescence in terrestrial plants and animals.
Sure. Yeah, so glowworms and fireflies are two that I spend a lot of time with in the book, but also foxfire. So a lot of people are familiar with the term foxfire from the books that came out in the 70s, sold millions of copies about Appalachian folk traditions. And so I actually familiar with these books. My mom had original copies. It wasn't until I was an adult that I knew that foxfire was a term for bioluminescent fungi. And it wasn't until I was working on night magic that I realized it's not a specific species. That's just the umbrella term that's used for bioluminescent fungi. And so I found a myriad of different species once I set out looking for them. You know, in this part of the country, bitter oysters and jack-o'-lantern mushrooms are two of the more common species of glowing mushrooms that can be found. But I mean, throughout the United States, they're just a variety of these fungi species that glow. And even mycelium, the structures in soil and things can also be bioluminescent. So bioluminescence is living light. So it's light that is being produced in an animal's body, within fungi. Biofluorescence is like a light energy that's stored that humans cannot see unless we're using UV light. And so in a lot of cases, in some areas, people are like, how could I get somebody interested and excited about this? And using a UV light and going down into an area that you think you know pretty well will often reveal a lot of interesting things. Scorpions are an example of things that glow in UV light. They've recently finding a lot of mammals that glow. Flying squirrels, for example, will be fluorescent pink because they biofluoresce, and
Oh,
we can see
wild.
that with the UV light. So bioluminescence is extraordinary, and biofluorescence is also a really cool and interesting way to kind of see the night world differently and start recognizing, just how differently other animals see things around them and how active the night world can be.
Well, your book definitely leans in a direction to have us explore our relationship with night and creatures of the night, and to feel like we, even as humans, might belong at this time of day as well, is kind of turning some things on its head. So, if people were to want to dive deeper into this themselves. We talked a little bit about moon gardens, but how does someone in their own backyard create a place where they can have a little bit more of a sanctuary at night that they can be involved in?
That was another reason that the book was pretty challenging to write, really, because ultimately I recognized that I basically was making the world as we know it seem strange, because it actually is. It's very strange that we would think that, being in a living room that's highly lit at midnight, that's what we see as normal, which is really pretty abnormal. And we're really, in the span of human history, this is a pretty recent development. Because our ancestors did have a different relationship to darkness and to night and these different seasons of day. So turning the world on its head, yes. I think when people want to, develop a different relationship to darkness or just start thinking about darkness, I do not think that you have to go far to experience night differently. I think that, if you've never gone to the darkest part of your yard or found, a dark place in your community that you are very familiar with in daylight, and just, pull out a chair and sit there and just wait and see what will be revealed to you. Let your eyes adjust, listen, just have that experience of experiencing night purposely. I think that you'll be shocked at what you will find, because I really believe that no matter where you are, there are wondrous things that will be revealed, and some surprising things. You become more familiar with sounds at night, smells. Our human olfactory sense actually rises at sunset. So when these night blooming flowers are opening, our sense of smell is actually heightened to meet them. So there's all these kind of magical, wondrous ways of sensory meeting at night than in the dark. And I think that spending time in the dark is really a sense of forced mindfulness too, because you cannot take things for granted. So your senses are acute. But so I don't think you have to go far. Another good way, though, to kind of inch into the night world is to look into local offerings in terms of owl prowls or night hikes, things that may be offered by nature centers or state parks or national parks. Other municipalities sometimes will offer things like this. And if you can't find any, I think that a lot of these organizations, nonprofits too, are really receptive to people's interest. You know, if they see that there is interest in having an event like that, they will often, you know, be excited to meet that challenge. So I think those are ways to increase time outside. And then in terms of finding darkness, which I think can be a real challenge for people, I think that that can also start pretty close to home, you know, like in terms of just taking inventory of the lights in and around your own house, and then in and around your neighborhood, and in and around your community, kind of just inching out in that way. Some of my favorite reader responses to the book have been about how, man, you know, I've got this neighbor and I don't know how to talk to him. And so they find ways for the book to make their way to these neighbors in kind of a positive way of inviting them to appreciate the dark instead of scolding them for having artificial lights. So that's been really wonderful.
Well, we appreciate you taking us into this world, and I do love a good subculture. So I think if you can find mothers around you, that would be a great way to start as well. We are speaking with author Leanne Henyon, whose book is called Night Magic: Adventures Among Glowworms, Moon Gardens, and Other Marvels of the Dark. Thank you so much for being a part of This Green Earth today. And if people wanted to learn more about you and your writings, is there a website they can go to?
Sure. Leanne Henyon is my website, and I'm also on Instagram, and I love for people to connect and find their way to the book, and hopefully it'll inspire some adventures that I can't even imagine from here.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for enlightening us, if that's okay to say, on the joys of the dark. Thanks, Leanne Henyon.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.